Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Highwire family, the Walendas, the Flying Walendas, we get Nick Walenda to talk a very important discussion on fear and how that affects all of us. And we'll do the news as well. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Fraudsters, they're sending messages through social media and emails with a Cash App scam. The message offers free money via the app to help help during this difficult time. So these people have no soul. They're taking advantage of poor people that are on their heels because of this whole coronavirus business. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info at risk by putting it out on the internet. You could miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit alone. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. And you have access to a dedicated restoration specialist in case you become a victim. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No, we prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats that you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Nick Walenda's Birthday Cocktail Party for January 24th. Let's see who's invited. From the office, Ed Helms. Actor Matthew Lillard. Yakov Smirnoff. Direct from Reno, Neil Diamond. Pour him a drink, he'll tell you some lies. Phil Lamar. John Belushi's here, and he wore a toga. And Manson family victim, Sharon Tate. Sounds like a party. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Man, I was ready to give up on your birthday, but then a few strong yeah. a few strong
then
names came in toward
Tate
the end.
Showed up.
Yeah.
Finish.
Salvage that party. Good to see you again, Nick.
Yeah, good to be on. Thanks.
I think the last time we spoke was on Take a Knee, and you were getting ready to walk over the volcano, which I think we all saw on TV.
Mm-hmm. Saw live.
Yeah. How was it walking over that volcano?
It was good. It was everything that I expected it to be, other than, you know, as we talked about, I think ABC requires me to wear a tether, which is definitely not something that I would ever choose to do. So that kind of takes away from it, at least for me, because of family history, et cetera. But, you know, the walk itself was amazing, just to be able to look down. I talked about it on the air, but to be able to look down into that lake of 2000 magma is as crazy as a dream come true for me.
Yeah, the tether you speak of is they had a safety tether, which doesn't keep you on the wire, but if you fall off, it keeps you from going into the volcano. Although, I bet there were some natives around there that wanted you to fall into the volcano so they could have a good harvest next spring.
But that's quite possibly the truth.
But the tether, you don't like walking with it. That's a network thing. That's not a Nick Walenda thing.
That's correct. Yes. But as you saw, or if you watched me walk over the Grand Canyon and the Chicago skyscrapers when I broke a couple world records, I was untethered, and that was because Discovery Channel would allow me to walk without a tether. However, every time I've walked on ABC over Niagara Falls and of course Times Square and the latest walk over that volcano, I had to wear a tether.
It's a very interesting. It's funny because I know, you know, networks just have attorneys and you ask them, can you do this? And some networks go, no, you can't do that. And then others would go, yeah, not, you know, Spike TV would go, yeah, go ahead. Light yourself on fire.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, Spike TV doesn't have the pockets that are deep enough to afford to fund a walk like that. Otherwise, trust me, I'd be on Spike TV because I wouldn't have to wear that tether. But yeah, look, the reality is I went into many meetings with the legal team at ABC Disney and actually went all the way up the chain to the top and thought I was going to get an approval to walk without one for that volcano and ended up 2 days prior finding out that I had to wear a safety.
Well, if you had any huevos at all, your first move would be to pull out just a big thing of bolt cutters. Just pull it out of your back pocket and just snap it right in front of the man and stare right into the camera like Jim Morrison on Ed Sullivan.
That's right.
That's right.
And then continue the conversation. I'll never forget the conversation I had just before I got on the cable over Niagara Falls. And it was with the president of news at ABC. And he said, I want you to understand, if you remove this tether, A, you will not be paid, and B, I will lose my job. So please keep the tether on.
Wow. But just to put a different spin on it, for anyone out there who even remotely was the armchair acrobat saying, oh, he has a tether, you know what? You put on a tether, you do the same thing, be my guest. I'd love to see you walk over a volcano. You have a tether. Go for it.
Well, yeah, look, the reality is if I had to use that tether, rescue would have been nearly impossible. And clearly, we talk about this in safety meetings with the network. But the reality was, because of the way it was rigged over that volcano and the fact that volcanoes aren't exactly designed to walk a wire over, the tether would have pulled me out away from that wire, probably about 35 or 40 feet. Well, my rescue team, the only means of them rescuing me is on that main cable that I'm walking on. So the reality is they wouldn't have been able to get to me anyways. Again, we didn't really talk about that. Of course, there was a reason why. But that's just the reality of it all. Is it would have swung way over to one side.
You should have fell,
security
man.
Theater.
Yeah, great TV.
although that would be a sucky, lousy way to die.
Where is the – obviously, you're always planning your next walk. And I'll let you think about that for a second. The book is Facing Fear, Step Out in Faith and Rise Above What's Holding You Back. God, we've never been a more timely book than this, by the way. You can pre-order it now on Amazon. It'll be available September 15th. I've been talking to people all the time, like we've lost our relationship with danger and fear, and you were right in the middle of it right now. Yeah. So we're being affected greatly by this. I played a college professor on yesterday's show who was explaining he's not going back to college to teach at the University of North Carolina because it's like walking into a burning building. And I thought, this guy's grown up with too many ideas and too much air conditioning and not enough things that could actually hurt him. So there's two things that happen when you grow up in an environment free of things that can actually hurt you. One is you start creating things that can hurt you. And then B, and this is the one that's mostly true, is you can't gauge the danger of things. You know, there are people that are scared to swim in the ocean because they think they're going to get bit by a shark. You know what I mean? But we understand the math. And we understand that you're not going to get bit by sharks. You can. The people who are scared to go in the ocean have a gauge issue. And this teacher who doesn't want to go back into the classroom is having a gauging issue. It's not that COVID doesn't exist and sharks don't exist. They don't know how to properly process it. And the news doesn't help. Sorry, go ahead. Whether it's sharks or COVID.
Absolutely right. In fact, I've been doing a lot of these over the last couple of weeks, and I've been telling people stop. If you want to stop being filled with fear, stop watching the news and listening to everything that you hear, and start researching it on your own. You know, that's the problem, as you said, with society. We feel like we can just jump in a bubble or stay in a bubble and be safe. You know, the reality is that that life happens whether we like it or not, and you know, the likelihood of that professor getting contracting coronavirus walking into a grocery store or Walmart opposed to at school, I would say the odds are just as well or better. So, you know, as you said, timing is everything. And when I started writing this book, it was because we had this horrendous accident where we fell a few years back and five of my family members fell to the ground. My sister was severely injured. Actually, five of them were, but she'd broken every bone in her face. She was in a coma, didn't think she would live. And I got back on the wire the next day. I had an event. I do a lot of motivational speaking from the wire where a business will rent out an arena and I'll actually walk on the wire and speak from that wire. And I performed for 6 weeks. But what I didn't realize is that small seed of fear was planted in my head when that accident happened. And I was avoiding it and burying it. And that after about 6 weeks off, I got back on the wire and started feeling a feeling that I didn't realize existed. It was never in my DNA, which is fear. And it came to the point where I told my wife, I don't think I can ever get on the wire again because I'm done. I'm so gripped by fear. I don't think I can do this. And I'll never forget the conversation that I had with her. My wife comes from 8 generations of a circus background. She holds a couple Guinness World Records for things like hanging by her teeth under a helicopter over Niagara Falls. And so she understands. She has the same passions that I do. For entertaining and inspiring. Wow. And she said, she goes, you know, your family history dates back to the 1780s and they've always lived by the words, the show must go on. You live by the words, never give up. And you say you do what you do to inspire people, that nothing is impossible. And here you're going to cave in to this fear that has gripped your mind. And I remember being in tears and saying, you're right, but I don't feel like I can overcome this. And it was at that point that I started just recollecting on my family and my great grandfather getting back on the wire after he lost two family members and one uncle was paralyzed in an accident in 62, yet sneaking out of the hospital and getting back on the wire, and thinking about all those people in the letters and the emails that I get after my events of people that are inspired. And I thought, you're right. I need to overcome this, but not only do I need to overcome this fear and deal with this process, but I need to do it so I can help others that are hopefully dealing with the same thing, that they'll be able to hopefully get through it. But I really wrote it to people like that are at work, that are miserable every day, that say, I got to go to work today and I know that I'll get a check Friday, so it's well worth it. I'm not going to pursue my dreams. I'm just going to settle for status quo. And I believe it's fear that's holding them back from actually leaving their job. And I tell people, look, in the book, I talk about it. You got to use wisdom. You got to be smart. Don't quit your job. But when I was pursuing the dream of carrying on this legacy, it wasn't like it was just handed to me. Here's the Walenda name. Go out and make a living. Not at all. My mom had written a book, The Last of the Walendas, in the 80s because she felt like there was no future. My parents pushed me away from the industry. I worked in a restaurant for 7 years off and on as I was being that starving artist. My great-grandfather wrote a book in the 70s. And in the book, he said, as a circus performer, one day you eat the chicken and the next day you eat the feathers. And that's really true. So what I encourage people to do, though, is step out of your comfort zone and pursue the calling that you feel like you have in your life. Pursue your dreams, because, again, so many people give up just because they're willing to settle for status quo.
The tragedy that befell your family was the chair. Was it the seven chair or the multiple chair?
Yeah, seven-person chair pyramid. That's right.
The seven-person chair pyramid, which I've seen before, and the first. So you guys were the first to try this, right?
Yeah, my great-grandfather created that pyramid back in 1947, actually. They performed it until 1962, and then when they were performing it in 1962 in Detroit, that pyramid collapsed, and that's when two of my uncles were killed and one was paralyzed from the waist down.
And it's like, is it three people on the bottom or two people on the bottom?
It's actually four. So it goes four, then two, and then one. So the two in the back and the two in the front on the bottom have a bar between them.
Right.
There's somebody standing on each of those bars, then a bar between those two, and then someone on top of that.
We're looking at kind of schematic of it. Was your sister up top?
My sister was the third layer. So we did the same pyramid, but added a layer, a fourth layer. So everybody was standing, other than the top person was my aunt, and she was sitting on the shoulders of the gentleman that was at top on the top. My sister was on the second level in the front.
And were you doing it without a net?
We were. Yeah. I mean, that's our family history and that's tradition and that's what we've always done. So we trained down low for every worst case scenario with wires moving. In fact, we trained in some windstorms as we were training to break that record, we were breaking our own record and trained sort of for a slack wire and different movement. We start low, then we go up about 10 feet, then 15, and then we go as high as we need to go. It's similar to my TV specials for the Grand Canyon, for example. I trained with 90-mile-an-hour winds because we'd done studies that had shown that the winds wouldn't exceed 55 miles an hour while I was out there. And in fact, I was hit with two or three gusts of 48 miles an hour.
Wow. So let's circle back to fear. So many people are kind of fear-based. You have in your DNA this lack of fear but then it reared its ugly head after this horrible accident. I just sort of look at my two kids, and I was literally having the conversation with my daughter and her friend last night when I was, they like to go for drives in the middle of the night where they just crank Rihanna and I drive them around town, and we're driving past an old house, and I was retelling the story about how my daughter used to like to just get a running start. She's about four on our bed, which was 34 inches off the ground. It was kind of high, and she just launched herself at me head first, and she kept telling me to move back. And I was like, I can't catch you. And I let her do a face plant, but my son wouldn't do it. He needed me to lean against the edge of the bed. Like, he would literally run and laugh and then jump. But if I stepped 1 foot away, My daughter, I was 7 feet away from the bed, and she was like, move it back further. And I'm like, I'm not going to catch you from here. She said, I don't care. Step it back. And so they have this crazy different relationship with fear that is ingrained in them. There's no reason. It's not like anything happened. It's just who they are.
Yeah, no, I think that, look, we're all born with, we're born with two fears, the fear of falling and loud noises. That is right. Just in our DNA. But, you know, what most people would call fear, I call respect. I think there is a healthy fear and there's an unhealthy fear. The healthy fear says when you walk up to the edge of a wire, it says, hey, that's dangerous. Be careful. That's a healthy thing. You walk up to the edge of a building. You look both ways before you cross the street. That's important. We need to have that fear. And again, it can be called fear. It can be called respect. But I think that's a fine line between the two. But then there's an unhealthy fear that holds us back from doing things as well that we should do. And that was what I was talking about a few minutes ago, whether it be pursuing our dreams, you know, pursuing something that for some reason, you know, look, I could be successful or what in my mind, of course, success is different to everybody. But if I would just step past that fear. But so many people are so scared to step through that. And step out of those comfort zones that they'll never achieve full success in their minds or really fulfill the calling of who they are or who they're supposed to be, in my opinion, which brings true happiness.
You know, it would be nice if we could start cultivating a fear of languishing in a shitty job for 40 years. You know, like everyone always talks about the fear of starting their own business or quitting their job or whatever. As I think back on my life, I had a fear of having a shitty construction job my entire life. I had a fear of not being able to afford a sports car or go on vacations or do any of the things I wanted to do because I had this sort of low paying, you know, blue collar manual labor kind of a job. So it's like, in a weird way, me trying to get from carpentry to comedy was a fear-based move, but it was a turn the fear over, kind of flip the script kind of a fear move, which is I was fearful of not making the move. And I think other people might be fearful of moving into this unknown low percentage job that may not pay you at all. But I think if you think about fear, and I'm just saying this to anyone who's listening, you know, where people have a fear, my family's fear based. So I remember saying things like, I don't think I'm going to sell my house. I think I'm going to rent it out and buy a better house for me and get the income from the rent. And I remember my mom going, well, what if a bunch of bikers move in and start cooking up meth? And I was like, oh, you're fear based. My feeling is what if I get an extra $6,000 a month for nothing? Like, you can take the fear. It's kind of a two way street. Like, everyone always is working worst case scenario. You quit your job and you don't make it as a singer or dancer or high wire walker or whatever it is. But think about the fear of just sort of languishing in the same go nowhere job for your adult life and then ending up in a casket that your son-in-law has to purchase. It was a callback. But yeah, take the fear and kind of reverse it and put it pointed the other direction.
I will tell you, in my own life, I use fear to motivate me often. You know, if I'm intimidated or fearful to the point of being intimidated, generally it means it's something I need to do because that's what drives me. You know, if I'm fearful of speaking in front of a crowd, which I used to be, that meant I need to get in front of that crowd every single day as much as I possibly can. Even though I am shaking in my boots as I walk out on stage to speak to them, I need to do it. And again, that is a driver for me. I've used what somebody would consider a negative fear of, you know what, don't go out there because you're going to look like a fool, and went, no, you know what, I'm going to go out there until I look like a genius.
Brian.
Nick, I'm glad you mentioned that because I told this story a handful of times on the podcast, but it's been maybe a year or so. It's one of my favorite anecdotes. Jerry Rice, maybe the greatest football player ever to live, certainly best wide receiver, you know, back in the 90s when it was like, no fear, play without fear, can't get me scared out there. Jerry Rice would often say, his quote was, I was scared all the time. I was scared I was going to drop the ball. I was scared I was going to let my teammates down. I was early in his career. I was scared I was going to get cut because I missed did a route wrong. Like this is the greatest player to ever play the position, and he used fear as a motivator.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to what I was talking about, fear and respect, and how that is sort of a fine line, because he respected the sport enough. He respected his fans enough. He respected his teammates enough and his opponents enough that he was willing, that he was fearful. Again, that is important. I've been told, I don't know if it's true, but Elton John pukes in the trash can before going on stage. He's not scared to go out there and do what he does. He's the best in the world at what he does, but he still does it. And I believe it's because he wants to deliver to such a high level that he has that deep respect, or what, again, a lot of people would cower down to, called fear.
And just as a personal anecdote, I'd never thought about the equating fear with respect. It makes perfect sense, because 7 years ago, I went to a gun range for the first time. Not a gun owner, no guns in the family. It made no sense for someone like me to do it. And there, of course, there's a little table. I shot it and the noise scared me, as you said, the loud noise scared me, and the kickback scared me so bad I dropped it on the table. And at that moment, I realized, well, looks like I got to start shooting guns. And I went to the gun range all the time, had lessons, purchased a weapon, and I'm not Annie Oakley, but I'm no longer afraid of it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people will not pursue things like that, the fear of failure too, fear of being too scared to shoot a gun, or fear of failing in a job. And I always tell people, look, you can't be successful without failure. Failure is just a stepping stone to success. You have to take those steps of failure. Every time that I've been knocked down, it's made me a better person, taught me so much more, and it's led to success. You know, you can't get to the peak of the mountain until you go through the valley. And that's so true and so real. And people don't realize that. They give up too soon. They give up because of that voice of fear, or that thought of fear.
That's what I tell my kids. I'm like, look, of course you're going to fall in a volcano now and again, but you get up, you dust yourself off, and you get back on that horse. You understand? You just you get the magma out of that
horse, but a different horse.
Yeah. You get back on that high wire. You know, there's another, as we're exploring fear, and I'm thinking about experiences I've had in my life, because there's a whole bunch of different ways. And I agree. I like people that have a little fear of the guy. We all know the difference between going out to meeting a friend for lunch, the Mr. On-time friend, versus the roll-in 10 minutes late friend, right? And when you're driving to meet Mr. or Mrs. on time, usually Mr., and they're always on time friend, you have a little fear of, like, I don't want to be late. I don't want to make this person wait. And, like, when I used to work with Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy was so professional, and he was so good at what he did, and he was so prepared all the time, that I had a fear of letting him down. I had a fear, like, I was going to flub my cue cards and he was going to get his I knew he was going to get his perfectly. So I would sit in my room and read my cue cards over and over again, because I have a fear of, like, stopping or having being interrupted or screwing up the bit or the whatever it is we're doing. I always had this sort of fear of letting him down. So if you surround yourself with really talented people, are like focused, hardworking, dedicated, whatever, then you get a healthy fear of being the weak link or letting that person down. No more better example than the 7-man chair pyramid, I'm guessing. You can't be the weak link in that endeavor, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That is one of the biggest challenges of that trick, is it's literally each of our lives are in the hands of 6 other people, and we are trusting them. So as you can imagine, the team is very, very strong, very, very close, on and off the wire, but there's a lot of trust there, and you certainly never want to be the weak link in that pyramid. You know, as you talked about Jimmy Kimmel, I think that just proves that he was a great leader as well.
Yes.
I think great leaders cause other people to become great. That's the idea. I've always said to my friends, look, if I make it, then I'm going to reach down and help you up. And if you make it, you help me up. And I always tell my kids, surround yourself with people that are better than you, that are smarter than you, that are more successful than you, because they will challenge you and they will cause you, they'll cause you to work harder, to show up on time. And in the end, you'll become a better person. I talk a lot about in the book about positive and negative people and really cut the negative people out of your life. Sometimes that's hard, because sometimes it is family members that you have to cut out of your life. But if you surround yourself with positive people, you'll generally be a happy person and enjoy life. Whereas those that surround themselves with negative people generally have a very miserable life.
Yeah, it's interesting. Another observation of mine from observing my very fear-based family. My mom and dad are very fear-based. I had a conversation with my dad recently where he just said, he basically said he was a coward. He just said he was scared of everything. And because of that, he never really led a life because he was always worried that he couldn't afford it or he didn't want to travel or he didn't want to do anything. But the thing that was, it's an interesting tell, which is, I'll use Jimmy, back to the Jimmy example. Jimmy surrounds himself with very high achievers who may even be higher up on the totem pole than he is in the achievement department. And it's not just like a celebrity thing. It's just a really high achieving people that then once you surround yourself with high achievers, whether you think about it consciously or not, there's a little judging going on. Like, again, you can't be late to the meeting. The high achievers don't abide by that. Or think about the people, think about the people who you know, and you've been to their home, and their home is beautiful, and they've done a wonderful job with it or whatever. And then at some point, you find out that they're coming to your home. And you're like, shit, we got to clean this dump up. Like, we got to get our shit together because I've seen the way this person lives. Now, when you go to someone's shitty apartment covered with cat hair, you don't have that same feeling when that person is then coming to your place. So there's like a little healthy bit of that. And as I think about it, my mom and dad never had any friends. And if they had friends, they were always bigger losers than they were. Because that's the way they kept it, because those people never judged and they never asked any questions. And if you start hanging around with people that are pretty successful and you start doing kind of unsuccessful things around them, they'll start asking, like, why are you late? Or why didn't you do this? Or how come you got divorced? Or how come you're not talking to your kids? Like, they start asking, you know, or they see you smoking or drinking too much. Like, they will start saying things versus the ones that are lower than you who don't judge. So it's interesting that the fear manifests itself in a sort of physical way, but there's also kind of a social fear of hanging around with people that might tend to judge.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I have the same situation with my family that believe it or not fear of the wire, not fear of falling, but very fear-based in life. In fact, my first book, it's called Balance, and it was a balance in life. And I talk a lot about the fact that I was raised so fear-based. You know, we toured the world, so we'd be in a strange city every week and hear gunshots out the window, and we were living in an RV downtown Detroit, that sort of thing. And my dad was so fearful that my mom would go to the grocery store and not come back in 30 minutes, and he'd think she was dead, you know, ready to call the police. So I was raised that way, so that was passed on to me. And early on in my marriage, I've now happily been married for over 22 years, and we have three amazing children. But throughout that time, early on, I wouldn't let my wife do anything. I controlled her. But it wasn't because I didn't trust her. It was because I was so fear-based of the surroundings. And it really was what I learned was I had to let go of all of that. And it was a long process to actually learn that, hey, you know what? You're being controlled by fear. You live in an industry that you should be fearful at all, but you really are controlled by fear.
Did it take her flying on the bottom of a helicopter by her teeth for you to realize she can take care of herself?
No, to get your attention.
It took her flying back to mom and dad's house and saying, figure it out, buddy. I'm not coming back.
That's wow.
Good girl.
Well, yep. You brought up balance, and I'm a big fan of balance. I told you I rode a unicycle for as long as I can remember and always balanced things. And
trying to impress the high wire guy by your unicycle riding?
Yeah. It was a whole 9 inches off the ground. But I did. I was very attracted to balance. Maybe it was something I was good at, or maybe I needed it in my life. It's kind of a weird thing. I told you guys I needed structure in my life so bad when I broke my shoulder. I kept going to football practice just to be around older guys and windbreakers who were giving me structure. And maybe I needed balance in my life so bad, I just started every chair I would sit in, I would lean back and try to balance it. Every railing that was at a park, I'd jump up on it and try to walk it. You know, like I craved it. Maybe it's because of what was going on in my home. But I've always said that balance is physical, but it's also kind of emotional. And people always talk about get a balance. You have to strike a balance between work and family. You have to strike a balance between doing things for yourself and doing things for others, or, you know, eating right and occasionally having some pasta or whatever. Like that balance, strike that balance. We use it all the time. I think if you physically balance for 10 minutes a day, it really does get the left side and the right side of your body sort of connected. You know, they say the reason you have all these great conversations or great thoughts when you're walking is because it's like your right side and your left side are moving and connecting. And I don't know the neuroscience of it, but there is a science to when you're walking, you're sort of functioning better in terms of your thoughts versus sitting on the on a beanbag. But I think balance is a big deal, especially now. And I would encourage people to do just little dumb things. Like I talk about, I have this Indo board. It's just a cylinder with the skateboard on it. I just get on it every night and just stand on it for 5 minutes. Make little games where you try to squat down and touch the ground and come back up again, or what have you. But I think I would encourage everyone to find some form of a little balance game to, and you can do it anywhere and it doesn't take any time and all that. But thoughts, Nick, on balance?
Yeah, look, I agree with you 100%. I think balance is a key to life in every aspect of life. And as you said, from a balanced diet all the way to I even take it even further. And, you know, when we are listening to whether it be politics or on the religious side, but having a balance and hearing both sides, I think so many people are so prone this day to go one direction. And that's just all, you know, it comes to the ballots and you're going to vote, you know, DEM or REP, whether you like it or that's who I am. And that's through and through. Well, I encourage people to really do their research and have a balanced life in that aspect either. You know, even when it comes to listening to news, make sure you have a balanced news source to where you're able to hear a little bit of every side. I think so much of life is one-sided right now, and it throws off our balance of life. And that has nothing to do with the physical balance. But, you know, the physical balance is definitely a key to, especially as we get older. Look, I worked with several geriatrics doctors on a project a few years ago, and it was really about trying to get the elderly to do what you're just saying, get on a board and balance every day. Because what they said is a large percentage, I don't remember the number, of seniors die because they fall and break their hip, and that's because they're out of balance. So the reality is that if we could get our parents to continue to work on their balance as they get older. Look, my mom is 67 years old and just walked between two skyscrapers 120 feet up about 4 months ago with me without a safety. So she's pretty darn balanced. Actually, funny enough, because of what she did, being in the circus her whole life and doing splits and performing, she actually had her hip replaced 3 months prior to that. And at 67, she was able to convince the doctor to give her a titanium hip that was for an athlete so that she'd be able to continue to perform. But balance, we're such losers.
I know.
Oh my God.
Getting off track, but the reality is, yes, balance is extremely important in every aspect of life.
You want to feel even worse. I think your mom, as I recall, would sew all your shoes or the family shoes, like go out there in Corkies or Keds or New Balance, even though you think that'd be a hell of a shoe for walking the wire. Yeah. But you got to wear these leather-soled kind of ballet-esque shoes. And
that's right. Your
mom would physically make them for you. Like would sew.
This is ash from the volcano and rust from that cable that I walked on.
Wow.
These are the actual ones that I wore and that my mom made for that walk.
I hate my mom. I hate my mom. Let's face it. I'm jealous of your mom. My mom would never sew me shoes ever. I'll try. Next time I see her, I'm going to go, hey, old woman, I need some new shoes.
How about some shoes?
So how insane is the sort of spectrum of human beings. You know what I mean? Like the crazed, your mom, my mom. Are they both humans? Can they be from the same genetics? Can they be on the same planet at the same time? They're so far away. Yet, you know, they both speak English and like cheese on a Ritz, you know, and probably would enjoy some of this. They both probably would enjoy Hamilton. How they get so fucking far apart?
The Melendas is the whole spectrum.
The stinky end of the
flying
stick.
The Melendas and the lion.
The lion.
You can You can also do a thing with a yoga ball where you just try to get up on your knees on the yoga ball. If you're good, you can stand on it. But if you just want to try to get up on the yoga ball and just put your knees on it and just kind of do it that way. Oh, this is me.
Add to that,
this is me standing on a yoga ball.
Impressive.
Yeah.
See, my trainer makes me, I have to stand on the yoga ball and curl weight. And that's the way that I work out.
I stood on the yoga ball and had a guy throw me a medicine ball. I think that's think that was my move. Although I'm not, I'm old and I'm not that good at it anymore, but, I used to be able to throw it as hard as you wanted at me before I fell off. But go on your knees on the yoga ball or go on one of those, I keep calling it an Indo board, Maxipata.
Yeah, that's right.
Although I've seen other companies make them?
Well, I've seen, if you want to do a makeshift one, I've seen somebody take a skateboard and then put like a 2 liter of filled with water, just fill or soda, put that underneath and you can do it that way too.
So in the circus, we call that a teeter board.
A teeter board, right.
Yeah, and rollabola is another name for it. But you can buy a piece of PVC at any local hardware store and just buy a foot of it. And then just a board. You can use a 2x6 and cut it, 2.5 feet long. And stand on that.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, Gina.
Question about kids, because a lot of us deal with little ones at this point. And it always seemed like, at least anecdotally, because my balance is for shit, but it wasn't when I was little and I was in dance and I was in ballet and I was in tap. And, we have a little one here and it just seems like inherently, yes, they trip over their own feet every once in a while or walk into a wall, but in general, their balance is really good. How do we encourage that? Or do we just sort of lose it like we lose our imagination as we become adults?
Yeah, I think the only reason why we lose it is because we discontinue practicing those things like ballet, et cetera. We stop doing that stuff because life gets too busy. I think, as Adam is saying, it's about getting on that balance board every night. It's about if you practice anything, you'll maintain it. And I think as a child, we're cat-like. We land on our feet no matter what. So, again, and we're on our feet and we're trying new things and we're constantly moving and testing and sampling. And the reality is if we continue to be that, that creative, if you will, with our lives and that active, then we would maintain that balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even 10 minutes a day or a night. It's 3 minutes. Like you just stand on it for 3 minutes. You play one Beatles song and just stand on it and go back and forth. And it just kind of aligns you a little bit, kind of gets your right side and your left side, gets your hemispheres kind of working together. And it's not a big calorie burner. You don't get covered with sweat or anything. And it's just, I don't know. It's a nice little thing to probably do. It'd probably be a good thing to do before you walked out on stage or before you had to give a presentation or anything, just to kind of get yourself aligned.
Like Tony Robbins, where he was on stage, bounces on a mini trampoline. Yeah. It's a
version. Oh, he does?
Yeah.
It's his assistant. Yeah. Look, I'm not here to judge, but she's not a tall gal.
She's a guru.
All right, let me hit Bet Online here. No shortage of action coming up with our exclusive partner, BetOnline.ag. MLB, NBA, they're back, plus UFC. UFC's got a big fight coming up, right? Cormier fight? That heavyweight fight's got to be coming up pretty soon. NASCAR, soccer, BetOnline's got the best odds on all of them. Stay tuned after this podcast for Fox Sports analyst Chris Myers going to talk to BetOnline Dave Mason about the return of sports and what you should look for coming up in the future, upcoming months. Need more? BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC daily. Also, hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, best props in the business. Visit betonline.ag. Yeah, that's right. It's coming up this Saturday. Cormier and Miocic, I think so you say his last name. Anyway, it's going to be a good fight. BetOnline.ag, our exclusive partner, Podcast One. And don't forget promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus today. Get going at BetOnline. All right, Nick, always inspiring to speak to you.
Thanks so much.
The book, Facing Fear, Step Out in Faith and Rise Above What's Holding You Back. And practical guide to overcoming fears. People, the fears, they will hold you back way more than being in a wheelchair if you let them. If you let it take a grip on you, in terms of your life, you would much rather your child be confined to a wheelchair than have a fear-filled life. I've seen it. I've seen both my parents. I've seen their entire life. They've done nothing, and it's all because they're fear-based. And at least my dad kind of realizes it and regrets it. I'm not sure if my mom's aware of it, but it's the fear-based life is a squandered life. You should have a fear of a fear-based life. It's available on Amazon, by the way, coming out September 15th. Nick Walenda, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on again. Appreciate it.
Always great. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do some news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Bill Cosby has filed a new appeal in the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania for the damnedest of reasons. According to Page Six, his attorney argues that his trial was not fair because it allowed five accusers to give decades-old testimony that swayed the jury against him. But wait, there's more. They also argue it was unfair to have included a deposition he gave in an old civil suit regarding his use of Quaaludes and his sexual behavior because he believed the testimony was essentially immune from prosecution.
Are you guys sort of just generally like me in that there's just no way this could happen to Henry Winkler? You know, like if your thing was like, hey, man, I've been married to the same woman for 41 years. I mind my business. You know, I'm a gentleman. Like, yeah. it's impossible. Like, there's a way humans think. And I'll bring it around to this COVID thing. But it's like someone was saying to me, they sent me a tweet. They're like, oh, just because you don't know anyone who got COVID or no one who got sick by it or none of your family members are sick or none of your friends are sick, that then affects your decision making. And I go, yeah, I factor it in. Like the same way I would factor it in if a bunch of people I knew dropped dead. Like I would factor it in big time. You know what I mean? Like I factor everything in. And this notion of like, there's a whole bunch of people that are saying the same thing about Bill Cosby. I'm sort of like, he deserves a day in court, but I tend to believe that this is what happened because a whole bunch of people are saying the same thing. And it would be absurd if you think about it, like if you just picked out going back to my dad. How could this ever work on my dad? You know what I mean? Or how could this ever work on someone who just never engaged in it at all?
You know, it requires a mover and a shaker.
You got to be somewhere around there. Now, maybe not every story is exactly as it was told, but you have to be alone with a lot of women and you have to have sex with a lot of those women, right?
Yeah.
So Jim's out.
And the two reasons given are, A, those stories are really old, and B, hey, I thought I had immunity.
Yeah, that wasn't supposed to count.
Yeah.
These are flimsy defenses.
Yeah, not
well,
great.
It's a weird argument for really anything, which is, but the time ran out. Like,
yeah,
I did it, but it's been long enough.
Arguing right. The technicality is always, yeah, kind of rubs me the wrong way. Like, oh, that shouldn't count. It's too old. Or I was promised that wouldn't come back to haunt me or whatever it was.
Yeah, although I think his first... God, he did do like a deposition with somebody where it was supposed to be sealed or something, and it was a lot of the information from that deposition that did
Whoopsie.
Come back to get him. But anyway.
Loophole.
You know, I think Dr. Drew once said to me that you don't want the female urinary tract, I think, from 0 to 60, and you don't want the male urinary tract from 60 beyond, or some version of that, which kind of made sense to me at the time. You would like Bill Cosby's life from 0 to 70, yeah. But not from 70 on.
Oh,
no, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, yes. Sorry.
So let's talk a little bit of COVID, but mostly some Fauci news, some vaccine news. First of all, Vladimir Putin's claim that Russia has the first coronavirus vaccine ready to be administered was met with worldwide skepticism by Dr. Fauci. Certainly, he's not buying it. The country's top infectious disease expert is casting doubt on the science and safety of the Russian vaccine and believes they're taking an unnecessary risk, as we talked about. Putin says he's already given it to his daughter. Fauci says he hopes Russia has, quote, actually definitively proven that the vaccine is safe and effective. I seriously doubt they've done that. He added the U.S. is working on a number of vaccines and, quote, if we wanted to take the chance of hurting a lot of people or giving them something that doesn't work, we could start doing this, you know, next week if we wanted to. But that's not the way it works. So that's his feelings on Russia saying we're first.
Get those college kids on that Russian stuff, the good Russian stuff, so we can salvage the Pac-12 season.
That's right. Maybe they're of hearty stock.
Yeah, they can handle it.
That was the other thing I was thinking when they said, you know, they're testing this on whoever, and then by October it'll be essential workers and whatever. In Russia, do you get a choice? Or do they just come to your house and say you'll be taking a vaccine now?
I was going
to
say, imagine being in Russia and, like, refusing the vaccine.
Yeah.
I don't think that goes well for you.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm surprised that we have Russia and we have China or even Haiti. Like, I'm surprised that all these places exist in what I consider modern times. You know, like when I was a kid, if you got a hold of me in 1977 and you talked to me about the year 2020, I would think of a sort of utopia, I guess, where technology has solved every problem we have. And I wouldn't even thought in terms of different governments running different ways or having these kind of regimes and those kind of regimes. Like, it's amazing in 2020, like, technology does something which it sort of shapes things, like, literally, like, every... So in World War II, if you looked at a Japanese plane or a German plane or a plane from the United States or an English plane, they're all very distinct and different. So you take a look at the Spitfire that was going up against the Messerschmitt, that was going up against the Zero, that was going up against one of the many American planes, a Mustang or something, that some similarities, but they had very distinct differences. And then as the jet age sort of kicked in and the computer started kicking in, they all just became one thing, one sort of, because there were only one thing that worked in the wind tunnel, and a computer told you, like, there's or another subject I rarely speak about, but race cars. Okay. Permit me.
Just this once.
When you look at the stuff that Porsche offered versus Ferrari offered versus Ford offered in the 60s and the 70s, they were very different looking vehicles. They had their different ideas on what it would take, what aerodynamics were at 240 miles an hour on the Mulsanne Straight was different to Porsche than it was to Ferrari, and they looked different. And then at a certain point, if you look at Le Mans race cars to now they've just all kind of look the same because the computer tells you, here's the shape you need to be in to go the fastest down the Mulsanne Straight. And it's that way with fighter jets as well. But I thought nations were kind of going to be that way. I thought, like, the computer says, here's the best way to run a country, you know, a democracy where people have a vote and you elect, this diverse group of people and people have some skin in the game and they have incentive to pay their taxes and blah, blah, blah. I didn't know there'd be all these, like, warlords and fucking despot leaders and horrible regimes, oppressive regimes. Like, I just thought by 2020 it would all kind of sort its way out. We'd all just pick the best way. The best way is, Western Europe and us and Canada and stuff. And you go, okay, that's the way
it works.
I'd like to live there. It's just sort of loosely based on where would you like to live versus where would you not like to live. Mm. Did you guys anticipate this much, this late? In this modern times,
would be over. The debate would be over by now. You know, we would all agree, or at least have some version of something that worked for everyone.
Yeah,
for the most part. I mean, I don't know that thought, oh, the Middle East is fixed. But in general, I think, yeah, we expected more.
I didn't know Russia would still be Russia, and China and Mexico's getting worse, and the Middle East seems to be worse, and parts of Africa for sure. Like, there's a lot of territory here that is a long ways away from figuring out whatever it is we started to figure out a couple hundred years ago.
Hell, I'm actually shocked, and I don't know enough about politics to debate anyone on this, but are you guys surprised that we still only have a two-party system?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Yes, 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 I am, of course. Feels like the potential exists for a third party. I'm making air quotes of like celebrity as the new third party. Like Donald Trump probably could have run as an independent. Kanye West, you know what I mean? He's not going to make much of an impact. What I'm saying is I think there's room there in the future, in the near future, for someone who's just a celebrity, an Oprah or someone like that, who
just
to run
other.
Just like, yeah, I'm fucking well known. I don't have to be a Democrat or Republican. I'm rich and I'm famous.
Yeah, it just seems a little archaic, you know, because people are like, you know, between Trump or Schwarzenegger or whoever, it's like you're just kind of picking one. It doesn't really matter. So it's weird that there's only two.
Well, we can all agree that we're disappointed. But I got to tell you, one thing we shouldn't be disappointed about is hamburgers. I feel like there are more choices.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
open longer. And I don't know if you guys have noticed, but it seemed to me, and maybe it's a COVID thing, I'm kind of curious what you guys think. A few years ago, McDonald's kind of seemed to be where, I don't know, Budweiser was, which is, yeah, they're big and they're ubiquitous, but no one I know wants a Budweiser. They want their craft beer and then IPA or whatever it is, and they're getting the good stuff. And McDonald's seemed to have kind of lost its luster a little, like from when you were a kid. And my kids want to go to In-N-Out Burger and blah, blah, blah. I've been noticing since this COVID thing, walking through airports, I've seen lines for McDonald's now. And I was driving to work yesterday, and there's a McDonald's up the street from my house. And I was confused as to what the line of cars were for. I thought it was for like COVID testing or something. It was the McDonald's drive-thru. I mean, there were 35 cars. And I thought to myself, is this COVID thing getting us all back to that comfort familiar? Like, I want that filet of fish. And it's like, I didn't want the filet of fish before this. Now I yearn for the days of the filet of fish. Is that what's going on?
I believe that to be 100% correct. On the drive back from Sedona, the 8-hour drive back, we stopped to pee, and Christy's like, oh, I'm going to get a Diet Coke at the drive through at McDonald's off the highway, obviously not a huge line. But then she was in line. She goes, you know what? I'm getting a cheeseburger. I'm like, you are? When's the last time I had a McDonald's cheeseburger? I'm getting a cheeseburger. Got 3 bites into it. It's like, this is disgusting. But it was, like you said, the psychological, this is comfort food. This is, this is what we all remember.
Yeah. I don't know if their stock's up, but I mean, they seem to be flailing a little bit a few years ago, and they are back, man. All right, let me hit Madison Reed, Mister. If you're getting a little gray, fellas, in the hair or in the beard or probably both, and you want to clean it up a little, might I suggest Madison Reed, Mister? I use Madison Reed, Mister. It's a little kit. Comes with some gloves. Put the gloves on. You take the color gel and just put a little dollop in your hand. You sort of mix it back and forth. You just sort of finger it, just sort of comb it with your fingers through your hair. And then you put the activator on, same way. And you let it sit there for 10 minutes. And then you rinse it, and it takes the gray and it makes it go away, but not in a sort of stark look, just a little more pepper. And a little less salt, and it has a very natural look, not that kind of John Travolta 90s look. So it's Madison Reed Mister. Right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMister.com. And use code Corolla for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Corolla.
All right, Gina, what else?
Well, speaking of balance in the world, which I think we're sorely lacking, now scientists... Fauci, other guys that just speak on the topic of vaccinations and COVID-19, just giving the data, are getting death threats. So Fauci is one of them. And now he and his family require round-the-clock security in the face of harassment and death threats from people angry over his guidance on the pandemic. Fauci and Trump administration officials have often held opposing views on how best to contain the virus, which at this point, this was a day or two ago, infected roughly 4.8 million people in the U.S. That's according to Johns Hopkins. Public safety guidelines like wearing face coverings, social distancing, avoiding big crowds, they've become a point of contention with many people. Fauci said in a recent interview on the subject that there's a degree of anti-science feeling in this country, which he believes is related to a mistrust in authority that spills into science being looked at as an authoritative figure.
He's getting death threats for talking about the vaccine.
Yeah, he has security, round the clock security. Actually, that's why I threw in, you know, scientists in general, because on Teresa and my podcast, we just talked about Dr. Osterholm, who's another scientist that infectious disease scientist that speaks about this constantly. And he said, if I don't get a death threat, it's a good day. And these are just, you know, scientists at universities, mild mannered dudes talking about data.
Did he get Max Pata, did he start getting death threats after the Jim Jordan thing? Because I think that's what set it off.
I mean, it's not saying when. He's actually being very private about like the exact specifications. But yeah, they him and his daughters have been getting them lately.
I started hearing it after he got into this, dust up with the Jim Jordan. And that's when I first started hearing about it. So, and I think those are maybe the religious people that don't like him talking about church or something like that.
Maybe.
I think this was started.
The ultimate cancel culture.
I think
death
it threat. Started with the Jim Jordan, the testimony I think there he gave. I think we did it when we were in our dark week.
Yeah. I mean, the story really broke August 5th, like last week. So that's about the right timeline.
Is that about right? Like, I don't know what the date is anymore.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Today's 12th.
It was during Dark Week, so.
When was that Jim Jordan stuff? Was that like on a Friday or something?
Yeah, it was
Thursday,
like on a Friday?
Friday
before that, yeah.
Like yeah, I think that Jim Jordan stuff is what's causing it, or most of it. I don't think it's vaccine. I think the Jim Jordan discussion/debate is what got people fired up.
Well, Adam, rather than get to showing your point so quickly, I found a story from April 2nd saying nation's top coronavirus expert, Dr. Fauci, forced to beef up security as death threats increase.
Wow, so before the Jim Jordan thing. So this is an old story, I guess.
Well, maybe he's adding.
He's talking about it now that it's been beefed up. It's round the clock. It's for his family as well.
Well, I think we can both be right, because I heard that after he got into this Jim Jordan argument that kicked in. So maybe it kicked into overdrive, or maybe. Yeah. I don't think. Is there any such thing as being an official in public or anything these days? And sharing opinions that's not going to require you having security?
Good to know. We're so into political discourse and having a conversation with dignity.
I was thinking about, because now there's also all these like city officials who are trying to, you know, defund the police or adjust the budget, who also are asking for more security simultaneously.
That's right.
Because
was that Mike Bonin or something in our?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, of course, they're human beings. They don't want a mob coming to their house, so they want the security. I was thinking about it last night. I just thought, if you guys want to know how I think about everything all the time, this is exactly my thought process. I thought, well, what would defunding the police, or not defunding, but significantly cutting a police and getting less, having less police essentially on the street, what would that do? And I thought to myself, well, let's say there was one police officer for every citizen in the United States. Where would crime be? Like, how much crime would we have, or violent crime, or any kind of crime? And I go, well, probably none. If there was just a cop, if you're literally
assigned to every person,
you have no violence and no whatever. But you go, okay, I wouldn't want that. But you'd go, where would you be statistically with cops or with violence or with crime? You go, well, none. Okay, well, then let's just go extreme. What if there were one cop for every 50 million citizens? What would that do to crime or violent crime? And I go, well, I bet it violent crime would go up.
Yeah,
because there'd be less police and there'd be more nefarious behavior. So now I think we have our answer, which is getting rid of cops shall create more of this, more of the crime that you're trying to get rid of. Now, the balance is what you're trying to strike. But I assume if you get rid of cops or you cut back on cops, there's just going to be more. There's going to be more crime in the places where you bring back the cops, which I think we're seeing. Fauci says he and his family have been getting threats for the last few months. Right. I never see anything on his wife or anything.
Is she around? July, he called the threats at the time, quote, a little bit disturbing. And now
I can hear him saying that.
Yeah. And now he's
can we hear Fauci saying it's a little bit disturbing?
Yeah, yes, we can.
Well, anyway, let's get it together, people. Leave Fauci alone.
And speaking of, to your point about the police, you know, in Seattle, where all hell's broken loose for a while, they did vote to defund the police and, you know, by an extreme amount of money and manpower. And guess who's quitting? Who I think just had enough of this shit. She was in the spotlight for a hot minute. They're defunding her, you know, her precinct, and she's done. Is the police chief Carmen Best, who we saw a lot of in the news. I don't know if you saw her.
She's a black female, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's just said, I'm out.
Yeah.
After all this.
I don't know what people are expecting out of, like, getting rid of the cops. I would say or bringing them, reining them in quite a bit. I think in just a small experiment we've conducted over the last couple of months, I don't think it's a good outcome.
Look to chop.
I was doing a show earlier today. I was doing Ace on the House, and a guy called in from Portland, and he's like, my office was downtown Portland. You can't really go down there. Like, he's just like, you can't use the office. And I thought, oh, that's wonderful. Brian, yes?
Yeah, back to the original story for a second. It's funny, Adam, that you said, I don't know if it was a happy accident or Freudian slip or just the way you think, but like you said, you know, if what Fauci is getting these ridiculous death threats for expressing his opinion, it's funny because he's not expressing his opinion. He's a scientist and he's expressing data and statistics. And I think I've said it before on the show, it's going to become a fucking mantra. Everyone says, oh, we're so divided these days. There is a fucking anti-intellectualism in this country that is fucking crushing this country. There's fucking 106,000 people dead because of anti-intellectualism, where it's like, people think it's fucking Fauci's opinion. That's the problem. They're giving him death threats because, like, you don't know more than me. You're not better than me. Yes, he is. He's a fucking scientist. Shut your mouth and listen to him.
Well, that's why he said that science is being looked at as an authority figure. Yeah. People don't like authority figures.
Yeah, well,
crushing this country.
I hate to shit on your point, but the beef that a lot of people are having with Fauci is he's saying no churches and no gatherings. And then when they say to him, well, then how about protests? He goes, I don't have an opinion on that. And that's the problem. So now that isn't science. So his science first thing he backs off of when they ask him about what about protests then? If you don't like large gatherings, then will you come out against protests? And he says no.
Is that the Jim Jordan exchange you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the Jim Jordan exchange.
What
but that's
then
the
explains
general thing.
The death threats he got between April and August?
No, I'm not saying I'm clear on this. He had it long before that. I'm saying he's not sticking wholly to science. He's weaving some policies in here. He's not going just on science. If he's going just on science, he's saying no gatherings, and that includes protests.
I'll acknowledge.
And that's what got a lot of people agitated.
I'm acknowledging that I'm ignorant to that. It happened when we were on Dark Week, and I didn't see it. So
yeah, well, it's all getting politicized. But his science is science, but it's also political as well. He's not just going straight science. He's working some policies in as well. I don't know. Do you have that, Max Zapata?
I'm getting it, yeah.
Brian, if you were on up and up on this while you were at a chakra resort, I would drive there and smack you in the face.
Yes. Did not say.
All right, I'll let Max Zapata find that exchange, and then I'll tell you first about Geico. Right now, Geico's offering an extra 15% on car and motorcycle and RV insurance as well. That's 15% on top of the money you could already save if you're going with Geico. So why would you go anywhere else? Never been a better time to switch and save or stay with Geico and get the extra 15% off when you switch by October 7th. Visit Geico.com and learn more at Geico. You got that exchange. Yeah, I saw it. Somebody, it was trending, I think, the day we had our dark week, or the Monday we had our...
It was the Friday we were heading up to San Antonio.
Oh, it was a Friday of the dark week, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Fauci, do protests increase the spread of the virus?
Do protests increase the spread of the virus? I think I can make a general statement.
Well, 500,000 protesters on June 6th alone. Yeah. I'm just asking, that number of people, does it increase the spread of the virus?
Crowding together, particularly when you're not wearing a mask, contributes to the spread of the virus.
Should we limit the protesting?
I'm not sure what you mean. How do we say limit the protesting?
Should government limit the protesting?
I don't think that's relevant to...
Well, you just said if it increases the spread of the virus, I'm just asking, should we limit it?
Well, I'm not in a position to determine what the government can do in a forceful way.
Well, you make all kinds of recommendations. You make comments on dating, on baseball, on everything you can imagine. I'm just asking, you just said that protests increase the spread. I'm just asking, should we try to limit the protests?
No, I think I would leave that to people who have more of a position to do that. I can tell you.
Government stopping people from going to church, Dr. Fauci?
Yeah.
Last week in the Calvary Chapel case,
all right,
five
we got it.
On
that,
the Supreme
Court. That's where the kerfuffle, or one of the kerfuffles, came about.
You know what's funny about those? It doesn't matter who is interviewing whom in that. It doesn't matter what side you're on. If you're Democrats grilling Republican or other way around, everybody, doesn't matter who you're affiliated with, has the same smirk when they're sitting up on there and interrupting and looking around and being cool. And it doesn't matter if it's Maxine Waters or Kamala Harris or Jim Jordan. It's how can you not feel superior when you're up there and just ready to interrupt and roll your eyes and do all of it?
Yeah, I think Fauci, I think you'd go, you know what? I don't think protesting is healthy as it pertains to this. But what are you going to do? People have rights. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
There was a way to do it.
Yeah,
all right.
It's funny when you search that video, there are all the headlines are different. Jim Jordan hammers or owns Dr. Fauci. And then other ones are Dr. Fauci owns Jim Jordan. And it's the same conversation.
Those are great.
Terrific. All right. Bryan Cranston tomorrow. I'm your emotional support animal, available as we speak, and get my book on Amazon. And leave a review. I do read the reviews. I enjoy reading those reviews. Tempe Improv are doing some live stand-up and some live pod. That's September 18th and 19th, so you can check that out. Say hi on our YouTube page, youtube.com/amcurl. There's stand-up there. Jordan Harbinger, you can say hi to on the Jordan Harbinger Show. And Nick Walenda, you can check out his book, Facing Fear. And until next time, this is Adam for Jordan and Nick and Gina and Bald saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get Adam's new book. I'm your emotional support animal. It's available everywhere, and the links are at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, this is Chris Myers, and I have a new podcast coming soon to Podcast One. CMI, the Chris Myers interview. I hope you listen for it and be glad for you to join us. But today, excited to be chatting with Dave Mason of Bet Online. You know, sports are back, finally back, and filtering through, and we're excited that they are back. And Dave, it's exciting to talk to you. So tell us what kind of action there is with a lot of stuff going on at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a challenging few months. You know, we went from promoting Russian ping pong and marble racing and all this other crazy stuff I had never in my wildest dreams. I thought I'd be handicapping. But now, you know, we got the NBA's back. The playoffs are almost here. NHL, MLB with their shortened regular season. And NFL's right around the corner. College football, we'll see. But if we're planning on it, if it's here, we'll roll all the odds for it.
Yeah, and I think we're all kind of waiting to see, so you better move on it quickly because seasons could be shortened or altered. And, yeah, it really has been missed, just the excitement of kind of involving yourself. How about, you know, baseball with extra teams getting into the postseason, and you mentioned the shortened season. I mean, we know about Yankees, Dodgers, we know the favorites, but there has to be a chance of good opportunities for some sleeper teams that might have better pitching that just get in the door and then all of a sudden work their way to maybe a major upset and make it to the the World Series.
Yeah, no, and we saw that. You know, we saw that ever since, you know, we've had the World Series odds up all throughout, you know, the months where sports were kind of down. But we still had all the futures up. And we saw that as news of the sports coming back and their shortened seasons. And teams were taking – I mean, sharp bettors and more intelligent bettors, they were taking shots on the longer odd teams, you know. So we were seeing that left and right. The same thing, you know, the more games there are, everything's going to even out, right? But the shorter the season is, no matter the sport, or the shorter the games in a series or whatever, there's that more of a anything can happen. Kind of like March Madness, one and done, right? That's why you always have those Cinderella stories. But if, you know, March Madness series were all seven games, then the Cinderellas would be few and far between. So that's kind of the same theory here, why a lot of bettors are taking more shots at these long shots than before.
Yeah, I mean, you could have the Yankees or Dodgers run in, and over that first playoff series, there's no one wild card. It's three games, and they're all in one ballpark. Now, again, home field advantage in baseball already iffy, but now the current situation, that could change things. And then also, you know, risk of injury is always a factor, but here you have health issues that a star pitcher or star player, right, could be out of the mix, and that upsets everything.
No, absolutely. And that's another great point, and another reason why I think people are betting long shots more than ever in World Series. You know, it's that just evens the playing field that you know, no one's going to be immune to catching this. You know, a star player can catch it from the Yankees just as much as a star player can catch it from the Pirates. So it's going to even the playing field a lot if it's some of these star players from the Yankees, Dodgers, Twins, Braves, et cetera, start you know, catching this thing. So without a doubt.
All right. America runs on football. The NFL, if any, I think will just go straight forward ahead, and they'll adjust. And simply when there were health problems at baseball, nobody folded the tents. They kept it going, and we're on target for a regular season. I know they have backup plans, maybe a shortened season, whatever, but we're good to go. And I know people who love to get involved in this, they got to be excited, and maybe things go up too quickly. You know, you don't win the offseason, but when Tom Brady is in Tampa Bay, or Philip Rivers in Indianapolis, even, you know, I'm intrigued by how people are interested in the Patriots, who are always the Patriots, but without Brady, and now Cam Newton or Jared Stidham, whoever Belichick goes with, that's got to create a lot of excitement and anticipation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, all that Brady news to the Bucs came down went after, I guess, all the sports got nuked a few months back. And that was an exciting week for us because, you know, we were just starving for action on the sports side of things. And then stuff like that happens, and all of a sudden people are betting the NFL futures. You know, they were betting the Buccaneers to win the Super Bowl. They were betting, you know, the Bills to win the AFC East. They were betting under season wins for Patriots, over season wins for Buccaneers. So we saw a lot of action coming in that week. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Buccaneers we have such a huge exposure on the Buccaneers to win the Super Bowl. I've never seen anything like it in all my years doing this. So that's the bettors are hyped on the Buccaneers. I mean, they were like, I think they're like 40-1 before people thought that Brady was going to go there. When the rumors started coming out, it was right down to 25-1 all the way down to, I think we have them like 8-1 or 9-1 now. They're probably overvalued, but you know, our exposure is just so big on them that we have to be a little conservative with their number.
Yeah, and it really grew. And here's, yeah, he's coming to, he was in one place all this time, to a new team with a lot of talent in Tampa Bay and a different coach. And yet without a preseason, you wonder, of course, he's an experienced veteran, but the timing and settling, and that'll be fun to watch. All right, before we wrap real quick, I mean, we could go on and on, but the NFC West is intriguing. And I always like, it's a simple thing, you know, the over under on wins, right, based on teams. And I think where the defending NFC champions come from, the 49ers, you know, obviously you've got Seattle with Russell Wilson. And you have the Rams, who were in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and I don't think they're as down as people think. I think they're going to surprise some people getting back up there. And then Kyler Murray and what they've done in Arizona. I mean, that division, it's a hard over-under because they're going to be playing each other twice a year, beating each other up.
No, you're absolutely right. And four teams that could legitimately win it. That Cardinals is a great example of how action came in. I mean, they're our most popular bet for over wins for the season. I think they're at 7.5 right now. And a lot of that came in when Hopkins got traded there and action just started piling in on the Cardinals. And yeah, the bettors are a pro 49ers, pro Seahawks, pro Cardinals. They're down on the Rams though, but I don't know how you can sleep on the Rams. You know, 2 years out of the Super Bowl. So that's going to be a fun watch without a doubt.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the time. Be sure to check out Bet Online. They're your online sportsbook experts and use promo code podcast one. That's spelled O-N-E podcast and then O-N-E podcast one. And you'll, when you join, you'll get a sign up bonus.